Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Torture and Organizational Liability Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 18, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Mohammed v. Palestinian Authority. The question in this case was whether organizations, and not merely natural persons, can be held liable for violations of the Torture Victim Protection Act, or TVPA. In an opinion delivered by Justice Sotomayor, the court held unanimously that the term individuals in the Torture Victim Protection Act encompasses only natural persons, such that organizations cannot be held liable for violations of the TVPA. Justice Scalia joined the majority opinion in all except Part 3B, and Justice Breyer filed a concurring opinion. To discuss the case, we have Eugene Kontorovich, who is a professor at Northwestern University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Kontorovich.
The Supreme Court on April 18th handed down a decision in a case about whether a federal statute that allows people to sue torturers, even torturers who have committed their acts abroad, whether that statute can be used to sue not just individuals, but organizations that stand behind those individuals, such as various quasi-governmental organizations or even corporations. So the case is called Mohammed versus Palestinian Authority, and the specific question involved is whether the Torture Victim Protection Act of 1991, which allows people to sue for torture committed anywhere in the world, even with no connection to the United States, on the theory that it's an international crime, whether that statute's use of the word individual encompasses things beyond legal persons. The statute says that an individual can sue another individual for acts of torture. Can that include corporations or other entities? In this case, the Palestinian Authority, which was accused of torturing and actually killing a U.S. citizen held in a Palestinian jail in the 1990s. Now, the background of this case and what makes it so important is it's the companion case of a much broader and larger case, Coible versus Royal Dutch Shell, which deals with a more general statute, the Alien Tort Statute, which has been interpreted by the courts to allow suits for a wide variety of international law violations committed anywhere in the world, not necessarily including Americans, international law violations including torture, but definitely not limited to that. And the question in Coible is whether that statute can be used to hold corporations liable, whether allowing civil damages for redress for violations of international law allows corporations to be made defendants. Now, the meta background of this is that normally in the United States, holding corporations liable in tort or even in criminal law is normal, but in the rest of the world, that's not so usual. There's not such a thing as corporate liability because the corporation is not really an entity. It only acts through its agents. So when you have an international law rule for which you're seeking civil damages, is it the case in international law that liability extends to corporations or is it not? That's the big question in Coible. Now, in the Torture Victim Protection Act, the question was a little easier because Congress had written a particular statute, and that statute repeatedly used the word individual. So when a statute says person, person doesn't actually need to mean person. Person could rather mean a legal person, a non-actual person. So person in legal text often means person and in the broad sense, legal person. But here a different word was used, individual. And the court found it very significant that Congress used this word. It's not the standard word they use. And also individual was used to describe both the potential defendant, the torturer, but also the victim. It says an individual will be liable for torturing an individual. So obviously corporations and entities may be able to order torture, but only people, human people, natural people, can be themselves tortured. And thus the use of the same word for both the victim and the defendant to the court meant that Congress clearly wanted to limit liability to natural persons. Now, what's surprising and interesting about this case is the way the vote came out, which was unanimous. People expected, I think, a much bigger split between the liberal and the conservative justices. And what's also noteworthy is that even the liberal justices were not concerned about the things that people thought that they might be concerned about, in particular, the lack of effective alternative remedies for the plaintiffs, the idea that maybe there's no one else who could be sued, that if you can't sue the corporation, there's no way they can actually get money because the torturers themselves were judgment-proof, didn't have any money. So the argument was that really to make the statute work well as a vehicle for recovering money, you need to extend liability to non-natural people. And the court didn't have any of that. They said, we don't want to make the statute work well. We don't know what well means. We want the statute to work the way Congress wrote it. And the way they wrote it, it only extends liability to natural people. Now, by far the most important thing about this is its implications for what the court is going to do in Coibor versus Royal Dutch Shell, the more significant and more notable companion case. They asked for further argument on additional issues in that case, which will only be done this summer. So that's a case they're going to rehear in oral arguments next year and decide next year. But this does not look very good for the plaintiffs in that case, because what they want to argue is that international law allows for corporate liability. Now, how do you find out what international law is? But this really doesn't really say anywhere with any clarity, so you look at how international law has been implemented by various courts, tribunals, and countries. So if the Torture Victim Protection Act is how Congress is implementing the norm against torture, that's a further blow against the idea of international law carrying with it corporate liability. Separately, the plaintiffs have an alternative argument in Royal Dutch Shell, which is that even if international law does not create corporate liability, we shouldn't use international law for those kind of issues. International law only defines the substantive conduct that's illegal, i.e. torture. For other things, like is there corporate liability, what's the scope of aiding and abetting liability, statutes of limitations, these kind of secondary issues, you look to federal common law, and we would think that federal common law, U.S. law, would extend corporate liability to these kind of crimes, but it usually extends corporate liability to other things. But it's very hard to say now that the federal common law of liability for international law crimes extends to corporate liability, because Congress passed a statute saying exactly the opposite. So it was difficult, I think, and unseemly for the courts to fashion a common law rule that goes directly against the specific policies that Congress has laid out when it directly addressed that matter. Now, the reason there's still a separate question in Royal Dutch Shell, this is worth pointing out, the Alien Tort Statute is a much older statute. So these are really statutes from two different epochs. The Alien Tort Statute is 200 years old, and the Torture Victim Protection Act is 20 years old. The Alien Tort Statute really doesn't say much at all about what it's supposed to do, and no one used it for its first 200 years. It was only resurrected in the 1980s as a tool of human rights litigation, and it's extremely vague about the kind of torts, the kind of international norms can be used, and any particulars. Congress, on the background of the rise of Alien Tort Statute litigation, in 1991 passed the Torture Victim Protection Act, which was seen as at least partially embracing what the courts had been doing using the Alien Tort Statute for. But when Congress did this, they also provided a lot of meat and a lot of detail, answered lots of questions that the courts would otherwise have to make up for themselves, and this is entirely becoming, as Congress is given the power in the Constitution, which I have written a few articles about, to define and punish offenses against the law of nations. When Congress fails to define offenses against the law of nations, but yet calls for some kind of liability for them, it effectively turns the defining over to the courts. And that's problematic because international law is vague, and that is why, specifically, the Constitution envisions Congress defining. So given that this is the area where the Congress has most clearly defined, and they have defined corporate liability as being out, that suggests it will not be hard to find five justices who think that corporate liability is out for the more general alien tort statute.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.